Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Samachem with Bet, two lines from the bottom. Amamar, Hotziru, Masha Atem Mutzim, Vichnisu, Masha Atem Machnisim. Make sure that you take out from the house whatever you want to the Chatzir, from the Chatzir into the house. Ad Shal Yotzi Atuei Vazeh. Before this other individual comes in, this Stuki, and does his thing, Viaser Lechem, and he'll cause a problem for you. The Memra, Tchi Mafki Inhu, Vehadar Mafik Ihu Lo Asar. Once they take the initiative and they take possession of the bitul reshut that he offered them, then his taking out his items after that have no impact. So this would be the conclusion from the suggestion of Rabbi Gamliel to those in the Mavoi to take possession of the bitul reshut, to utilize it before anybody else does, because then once they've done that, they've made sure or ensured that nobody can reverse the bitul reshut. V'atanan. Don't we have a Mishnah coming up? Mishnatan Rishuto Vehotzi Ben Bishugeg Ben Bemezid Oser. Someone who granted their rights, relinquished their rights in the Chatzer to other parties, and then afterwards, by accident, unintentionally, or intentionally, they carry something from their house into the Chatzer, which means they're reasserting their rights in the Chatzer. Oser, Divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, if you do that, it's as if you never did the Bitul Reshut. It undermines the Bitul Reshut you've done before. Right now we're relating to him as a Jew, because he can do bitul reshut. If he's a Nachri, if he's a Goy, he could only do schirut. So the fact that we even allow him to do bitul reshut means that we're addressing him or treating him like a Jew.
Why are we worried about him? Why do we have to do all these
things? It's the same as anyone else. It's the same for every other Jew. But the other Jews, we assume, are more cooperative, and therefore they're not going to reverse what they've done, or they're not going to carry on Shabbat. Our fear with the Stuki is that he might carry on Shabbat, or he might undermine the bitul reshut that he's done. It's much more reason to believe that. Amar Rav Yosef, Ema Eino Oser. Amen. The Mishnah to read that when Rabbi Meir says that once you grant him reshut and then he carries reshugeg mezid, Eino Oser, he has no impact. Vayamar lo kasha. That's not the way to solve the problem. There's no issue here we can reconcile. Kan, shehziku bnei mavoi b'mavoi. Kan, shelo yehziku bnei mavoi b'mavoi. Meaning that in our instance, once the Bnei Mavoi took possession, then the other individuals carrying out has no impact. On the other hand, the Mishnah that's upcoming that says he's Oser is prior to their exerting reshut, exerting ownership over the property that was relinquished, and then he carries out. So he reasserts control before they assert control over the property. V'atanya here, Atanya here is b'nichuta, a support of this understanding. Ajlo natan rishuto. If, before he gave rights, relinquished rights, hotzi, he took it out, ben bishogeg, ben mizid, yachol levatel, divrei Rabbi Meir. Then, whether it's intentional or unintentional, he can still be mevatel. He can still relinquish his rights. Rashi over here says, what does that mean? Ajlo natan rishuto. Rashi says, this person is a mumar lechalel Shabbat. This person has a great track record of being Mechalel Shabbat, and therefore we know he is a Mechalel Shabbat. Whether he does the Chilul Shabbat intentionally or unintentionally, Rabbi Meir says he's still able to be Mevatel Reshut. We treat him like a Jew, a regular Jew, and he can be Mevatel Reshut and allow us to use that or utilize that towards making an Erev Chatzirot. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bishogeg Yachol Levatel, Bemezid Eino Yachol Levatel. Rabbi Yehuda distinguishes with this Mumar L'Chalel Shabbat that if he unintentionally carries out on Shabbat or prior to his being Mevatel Reshut, then we do allow him to join into the Eruv or be Mevatel Reshut. But Mezid, if he does it intentionally, then we say he's out of the picture and he cannot be Mevatel Reshut because he's treated like a Nachri. Then, Mishinatan Reshuto, if he's already granted his rights, then Votzi, then he carries out into that area, Ben Bishogeg, Ben Bemezid Oser Divrei Rabbi Meir, similar to the Mishnah that we're about to see, which is then Rabbi Meir says whether he counts out intentionally or unintentionally, it's Asur. Intentionally, because he's reasserting his rights, he's causing a problem. Bishogeg, because we saw on yesterday's daf, that he was Kones Shogeg Atu Mezid, so therefore also by Shogeg, whereas Rabbi Huda sticks to Ikar Adin, which is Bemezid Oser, if he does it intentionally, then he reasserts his rights, and he undermines the bitul reshut b'shogeg, ain't no oser. If he does it unintentionally, then he's not reasserting his rights. So you have two statements so far in this braita. The first statement is, prior to his granting reshut in the property, he does something wrong. Rashi claims what he's doing wrong is that he's a mumar lechalel Shabbat. So he's mechalel Shabbat prior to granting the bitul reshut. Rabbi Meir says, then he can grant reshut. no matter what. Rabbi Yehuda says you can only grant Bishul if he does it Bishogeg, was the Chilul Shabbat, not Bimezid. After he's already granted rights, then Rabbi Meir says any assertion or reassertion of his rights are problematic, whether it's Shogeg or Mezid. And Rabbi Yehuda says it's only a problem if he does it Bimezid, not Bishogeg. Then we have a qualifier here, Bameh Dvarim Amurim, about which was this said, Bishlo Hechziku Bnei Mavoy B'Mavoy. That's as long as the people of Mavoy didn't assert their rights or accept the Bitul Rishut that was granted to them. If they already took the rights that he granted them through the relinquishment of his control, and then he carries out, doesn't matter if he does it intentionally or unintentionally, he can't reverse it. Once you've taken hold, basically made a kinyan on the rights that he granted to you, then he can't undermine it, he can't reassert his rights in that instance. Who says Bameh Dvarim Amurim? The way we've learned until now, it seems like it's only Rabbi Meir who is saying that. Because we just had a machloket, what the status of this individual is. Rabbi Meir said the status of an individual is a Jew. And that's why Bishogeg, he's allowed to grant you Rishut, even though he's a Mumar, the Chalal Shabbat. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says when he's a Mumar, the Chalal Shabbat, he can't grant rights, not Shogeg, not Mezid. Makes it sound like Rabbi Yehuda believes he's a Nochri, and therefore you need Schirut. So the Bameh Dvarim Amurim here would only apply to Rabbi Meir and not to Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the qualification itself is unnecessary because this is a Nochri here. That's what Rashi says. If you look on Rashi, it says, Bameh Dvarim Amurim, Rabbi Meir Kamarla. This is said by Rabbi Meir, it's a qualification of Rabbi Meir. Deir Rabbi Yehuda, the Lishna de Matniten Kamar, the lo mahanya chazaka. According to the Lishna of the Mishnah, chazaka doesn't work at all over here. When the Braita, Rabbi Yehuda says, Ashlo tekshach, time Allah mishum dahanya chazaka. Do everything before dark, because otherwise, your chazaka is not going to work. But that's not because chazaka doesn't work in general. It's mishum tazav, arihuko ve kuchavim. That's because he thinks the stuki is like a non-Jew. So we have had two formulations of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion within Rabbi Gamliel. We had one formulation of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, which makes it sound like he thinks that Tzduki is a Nachri. That was in the Braita that we quoted in yesterday's Daf. There makes it sound like Rabbi Yehuda thinks that it's meaningless, completely meaningless what he does. He has a din like a Nachri, and he has to do Skirut, and there's nothing to discuss. So in that instance, it's possible that Rabbi Yehuda would agree that when it came to Yisrael, chazaka would work. And therefore the Bameh Dvarim Amurim over here is meaningful. On the other hand, if Rabbi Yehuda believes that the Tzduki is like a Jew, but despite the fact that he's a Jew, chazaka doesn't work. Meaning taking a hold, you have to do everything before the sun sets, because if we enter into Shabbat and he decides to reverse his granting of Rishut, it works. His reversal works. It's reassertion of rights works because you can never take hold of what he granted. There's no such thing as a kinyan on the Bitul Rishut. If that's the case, then the Bameh Dvarim Amurim over here is certainly not Rabbi Yehuda, then it is Rabbi Meir. So we've had two formulations of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, one of which says the reason it doesn't work here, or the reason he has a different view of what Rabban Gamliel said, is because he thinks that the Tzduki is an Achri. Tzduki is an Achri, then the Bameh Dvarim Amurim over here, which said about Israel, it's possibly agrees to. If the reason he said that he disagrees with the way Rabbi Meir quoted Rabbi Gamliel, and he says the way he quoted him was that you have to do everything before sunset, is because he believes you can't do what Rabbi Meir says. Rabbi Meir says you can assert your rights after sunset, and then that's it. You've got it for the whole Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't do it. You're just unable to do that. If you're unable to do that, that means that he doesn't agree with the Bameh Dvarim Amurim over here. And that's why he told them to do everything before sunset, not because he's not a Jew, not because there wasn't Bitul Rishut. There was Bitul Rishut, but you can't do anything about it. Once Bitul Rishut is done, you better hope the guy doesn't reverse it. Here, where you're dealing with it Tzduki, the assumption is that he might reverse it on Shabbat and ruin the Eruv for you. In addition, Tosafot thinks Rashi's explanation here is incorrect. He says that the way he explained the Braita is before he gave his Rishut, we're dealing with someone who's a Mumar L'Chalal Shabbat. He has a number of questions on it, two of which are pretty straightforward. Here, there's a big difference between a mumar b'fehesya and a mumar b'tzinah. Someone who violates Shabbat publicly versus someone who violates Shabbat privately. We're about to do this in the Gemara. Here, the Braita makes no distinction. It already raises questions as to how could we be talking about a mumar here if you don't distinguish between b'fehesya and tzinah. Number two is, if we're talking about a mumar l'chalal Shabbat, why does it have to be hotzi? Why does it have to be that he carries on Shabbat? It can be any one of the 39 malachot. It can be mumar l'chalal Shabbat. So why does the Braita in particular focus on Hotzi? So those are two simple things that Tosafot claims that doesn't really make sense what Rashi says. And therefore it says, Umafaresh ri, te halcha lab mitam mumar kamar. The mumar lo shayach el badam ragil lechalel shabbatot veinu nizhar klal. The definition of mumar, and this Tosafot brings up in other places, is someone who is a recurring offender. Mumar means that you do it over and over and over again. It's not you do it once. Someone's b'chal Shabbat once is not a mumar. A mumar is someone who does it on a continuous basis. Whether it was accidental, like you were asking before, David, what do you mean b'shogeg? It was a one-off case. He did it b'shogeg, or he did it b'meizid. Or shaya dachuk fisha'a. It was a temporary thing that he really needed to carry. Now, if he did it on the previous Shabbat, even intentionally, it wouldn't have mattered here. I feel like Rabbi Yehuda. The problem is he did it on this Shabbat. And once he does it on this Shabbat, once he's makzik birushuto, does that matter? On this Shabbat where he walks out and he carries out from his house into the chatzer, what does that mean? Is it meaningful prior to him being mevatel rishut? Is it only meaningful after he's been mevatel rishut? So that's a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, if he carries out prior to being mevatel rishut, he can no longer be mevatel rishut. He's already asserted his rights over the property. By asserting his rights over the property, he can't now go back and be mevatel rishut. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir says, that's only after you've been mevatel rishut. Mevatel rishut then relinquishes your rights. Until then, he's okay to assert his rights. And therefore, Rabbi Meir says that after the fact, you can be mevatel rishut. He can relinquish his rights. And that's the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir in the ratio of that braita about ad shelo natan rishuto. Prior to relinquishing his rights, what was his behavior? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, his behavior was that he was asserting rights, then we're done. For the Shabbat, this Shabbat at least, next Shabbat, we'll talk about it again. For this Shabbat, we're done. Rabbi Meir says if he's intentionally inserting rights, then we have a problem. Because if he's intentionally doing it, that means he doesn't intend to relinquish rights, he can no longer do it. But if he did it unintentionally, just carried out for whatever reason, then he can still relinquish his rights. He's not trying to undermine Eruv, he's not trying to prevent them from having the Eruv, therefore he can relinquish his rights. And that's the way the Ri explains this first part of the Braita, unlike Rashi. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'lashon acheret. Rabbi Yehuda says it in a different language. This is the quote from Rabban Gamliel. Baruv asu tzorchechem b'mavoy ad shelo techshach. Before it gets dark, v'yaser aleichem, and then he'll cause a problem for you. So that was the lishna of the Braita. Ad shelo techshach, because over there he believes that you cannot be machzik reshut. You can't take a hold of it. V'yaser aleichem, alma nachrihu. Over here, classified as a nachri. Va'anan, we had in our Mishnah, ad shelo yotzi tanan, before he asserts his rights. So what's the problem here? Is the problem that once nightfall comes, it's a problem? Or is the problem is that he's going to carry out, and that's going to be the issue? And that's what we discussed before, that Rabbi Yehuda in the Lishna of our Mishnah says, ad shelo yotzi, before he comes and reasserts his rights. So there, Rabbi Yehuda makes it pretty clear that you can't take hold of the property. Even if the Bnei Mavoi jumped the gun and they're first, doesn't make a difference. Because as soon as he asserts his rights, he ruins it for everybody. That's the one possibility. That's our Mishnah. And we just quoted a bright over here where Rabbi Yehuda says, ad shelo techshach, do everything before it gets dark. Once it gets dark, there's nothing you can do anymore. Why can't you do anything more? Because he's a guy. And if he didn't do schirut, there's nothing to talk about. Those were the two opinions that Rashi mentioned, we just quoted before. Our Mishnah that says, ad shelo yotzi, that's because we're afraid that he's going to assert his rights. Your Eruv is only as good as long as he doesn't assert his rights. Once he asserts his rights, your Eruv collapses, even if you beat him to the game and you take out first and you assert your rights there. So Rabbi Yehuda doesn't subscribe to that. In the Braita, the whole problem is that he's a Nachri. And if you didn't rent from him, then as soon as the nightfall comes, there's no Eruv here because he didn't rent from him. So that's what the Gemara is asking here. This stira between the way Rabbi Yehuda formulates it in the Braita versus how he formulates it in the Mishnah. So Ema, amend the Mishnah to say, ad shelo yitzei hayom. Not ad shelo yotzi, before he'll take it out, but rather before the day is gone, before it's nightfall, and then they look the same. The other option is to leave the language the way it is, but to say, which I meant two different instances. Kan, b'mumar l'chalel shabbatot b'tzina. The difference between a person who is a regular in being violating the Shabbat, he does it on a regular basis, without any inhibition, without any remorse. But the question is, does he do it publicly? Only privately. If he does it privately, then he doesn't lose the ability to grant rights in the chatzer.
But then we wouldn't know.
No, but sina means any less than 10 people. It's not in a public arena or a public forum. Somebody does it in the privacy of his home. You see him light, all of a sudden a fire is lit on the middle of Shabbat. That's something where a couple of people know about it. So the difference between sina and fares is whether he does it in front of 10 people or not. So here in the Mishnah where it says, ad shelo yotzi, that's talking about a case where he's mechalel Shabbat b'tzina'ah. Since he does a b'tzina'ah, he retains his status as a Jew, and he can be mevatel reshut. The only problem for Rabbi Yehuda is, yes, he can be mevatel reshut, but that's all he can do. There's no way for you to acquire that to prevent him from reasserting his reshut. And that's why Rabbi Gamliel's suggestion was, get everything done before he reasserts his ownership over here. On the other hand, the Braita is speaking about a case where he's mechalel Shabbat b'farhesya. He does it publicly, he loses his status as a Jew, and in losing his status of a Jew, he's now treated like an achri, and you need schirut. That schirut that doesn't work, and that's why the Braita says, get all your work done before nightfall, because once nightfall comes, he can't be mevatel reshut. There's nothing to talk about. Unless you have schirut here, you can't make an eruv. Keman azla hadatanya. Who does this Braita follow? Mumar v'giloi parnim harizeinu mevatel reshut. A mumar, and someone who is megale panim, generally megale panim is somebody who does something without inhibition, he cannot be mevatel reshut. Umar says, gilu panim, mumar havi. Gilu panim is usually a modifier to mumar. Mumar, what type of mumar we're talking about? Someone who's gilui panim, someone who has no inhibition. So they're saying, wait a minute, how do you explain that? Why are you saying mumar and gilui panim? Ella, the bride should read this way. Mumar, big gilui panim. Someone who is a mumar, but does it publicly without any regard for who sees him. Then, enu yachal vatel reshut. He is unable to relinquish control there. Come on. That's like Rabbi Yehuda, the way we just explained him. The Rabbi Yehuda says, the mumar lechalel Shabbat, b'farhesya cannot be mevatel reshut, he's treated like a nachuri. So how Gavra, we have a story here. There was this individual, the nafak b'chumrata de medusha. He went out with this chumrata medusha, which is not clear what this chumrata medusha is. Rashi gives two interpretations. The first of which is a ring, which has an inlay that is different than the material of the ring. That's one possibility. The other possibility he brings is that it is a kosher shabosim. It is this perfume bottle or sack that they used to wear or carry out in general, but here he's carrying it out on Shabbat. So this individual either went out with this ring that has this inlay in it, and it's considered to be a masa because it has no utility on Shabbat. And it's not a tachshit. It's not jewelry because it has utilization or utility to use as a stamp. And so on Shabbat, it's not considered to be jewelry to walk around with it. Or the bag of bosem of perfume is considered to be carrying because it's not considered to be a tachshit for a man. So in either of these cases, he's walking out with this on Shabbat. Kevin dechazil Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, when he noted Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, who is the Amora, the grandchild of Rabbi Kasia, he covered it up. Amar Kengonze, Mevatel Reshut Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia says, this guy can be Mevatel Reshut because he is a Mechal Shabbat Bitsina. He wasn't willing to be Megale Panim, he wasn't willing to do it. When he saw Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, he was embarrassed about it. He had some inhibition, and therefore he covered it up. And that's why, as a din, like Yisrael, not like a Nachri. Tosafot raises an interesting issue, and he says that the Gemara in Moed Katan says that Rabbi Yehuda Nesia himself went out with a Chumrata de Medusha. So how do we reconcile that? So the Rabbeinu Hananel says, oh, here it was in Reshut Rabim, over there it was in a Chatzer. That's how he tries to reconcile it. But Tosafot takes Rabbeinu Hananel to task on that, because we have a principle that any jewelry you're not allowed to wear Reshut Rabim, you're also not allowed to wear in the Chatzer. We saw in the Mishnah and Shabbat, there are only two exceptions to that rule. Those were for the woman to look nice on Shabbat. But other than that, there aren't any exceptions. If you can't wear in a Reshut Rabim, you can't wear in a Chatzer. So that's not a good answer. So Tosafot in the end says that it must be that the first explanation of Rashi is right, that we're talking about a ring over here. And the difference is not about whether it's a tachshit, but whether it's mutar betiltul for tzar kufo and tzar mikomo. Because it's usher as a tachshit. It's not a tachshit, but it's always a sur. Question is tiltul. Does that have utility on Shabbat? And can you take it out for tzar kufo, tzar mikomo? That was the difference. Rabbi Yehuda had tzar kufo, tzar mikomo as a dispensation, whereas this other individual did not have that, and therefore it was problematic. And the Rabbeinu Tam makes a third suggestion, which is both of them took it out, but how did they take it out? Rabbi Yehuda Nesia wore it on his finger, whereas the other individual carried it in his hand. He wore the ring versus carrying the ring, and we've seen that before. You wear clothing, you wear tachshitim, that's okay. You carry them, that's problematic. So Sefod introduces problems in the Rabbeinu Tam's shot, but they're trying to reconcile between this here. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia sees this person, thinks he's Michal Shabbat, and Rabbi Yehuda Nesia himself acted in a similar fashion. So the Rabbeinu Ochanan's distinction, which is different between the Chatzer and Shut Rabim, the Reis distinction between, it's not an issue of Takshid, not Takshid, it's an issue of Tiltol, Muksa, and whether it was Tarek Gufo, Tarek Mikomo, and the Rabbeinu Tam, who says it's a difference between how you carried it out. Right, Amar Ravuna, Ezu Yisrael Mumar, who is called a Mumar? Zeh Mechalel Shabbatot B'Faresya. That's someone who violates the Shabbat in public. Amar Rav Nachman, come on. Who's this like? Ike Rabbi Meir, this is a machlok we saw in the Gemara in Bechorot. Rabbi Meir says, Choshud the Dabar Echad, Choshud the Cholat Torah Kula. If a person is a wanton violator of any Aveira in the Torah, then he becomes a Mumar the Cholat Torah. He's no longer trusted in any area. Not just in the area where he violates, but we extrapolate that to a whole Torah, and we say this person is just a violator. Avilu bechad mikol sirim Torah nami. Even if any of these sirim in the Torah, why did Rabbi Huna specifically mention Shabbat and not any other isur? So it can't be that he's subscribing to Rabbi Meir. Ikra bonan amre choshu the dover echal do avi choshu the chol Torah kula. According to Rabbanan, wherever you are a wanton violator, that's where you have a problem. Outside of that, you are trustworthy. Then over here, Ad Davi Mumar Labudat Kochabin. The only thing that has the effect of being Kol HaTorah Kula is Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, which is Shakol Kol HaTorah Kula, Kofer Bakol, there a person who does that one Aveira, then he loses trustworthiness or his standing with regards to all Aveirot. Other than that, there is no such thing. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzhak, Litein Rishut Ulevatel Rishut. He's not saying that he's a mumar, the Kol HaTorah. He's not saying that mumar here has a very specific meaning in Rav Huna's statement. It means he's a mumar in terms of relinquishing control or being bevatel reshut. President Michal Shabbat Vesya is a mumar in terms of granting rights inside of the Chatzer. Uri Chetanyo, similar to the bright that we have. Israel mumar, mishamer Shabbato b'shuk, mevatel reshut. Israel who is a mumar, again, the wanton violator, but only does it privately, not out in the public forum, without the reshut, then he's able to relinquish control. She'eino mishamer shabato b'shuk, if he's a violator in public, eino mevato reshut, then he can't be mevato reshut, mipnei she'amru, Yisrael noto reshut, minotein reshut. Yisrael can grant rights, accept rights. Nachri, adji askir. Non-Jew, you have to rent from him. Keitzad, how does it work? Omer lo reshuti kenu yalach. If he says that, my possession, my ownership here is given to you, granted to you, reshuti mevutelet lach. My ownership and rights here have been nullified, relinquished to you. That works as well. Kana, ein tzarech liskot. The person who is the recipient is automatically kone, and he doesn't have to be zoche. You don't have to do a formalistic kinyan here. You don't have to do a kinyan sudar. You don't have to do a real kinyan like in a transaction. The articulation of the bitul reshut is sufficient to have bitul reshut here. So we see in this braita the idea that someone who's a mumar lechalo shabbat b'farhesya does not have the ability to be mvatel reshut or be notel reshut. He's outside of the world of eruv, and that's what Rav Huna is saying. Someone who's a mumar lechalo shabbat b'farhesya is a mumar legabe bitul reshut and kniat reshut. Vashi amar, Vashi says no. Hai tana hu dechamir alei shabbat kavodah zarah. Rav Huna is speaking according to the tana who thinks that shabbat and avodah zarah are an equal plane. That means when you violate Avodah Zarah, you're Mumar the Chol HaTorah Kula. You violate Shabbat, you're Mumar the Chol HaTorah Kula. That's Kedetanya. Mikem velo kulchem. The Pasuk in the beginning of Vayikra, when it talks about a person who's bringing a voluntary korban, where it says, Adam ki akriv mikem. Person who's bringing a korban from amongst you. Mikem, the mem in front of it, is a miut, or a modifying preposition that says that not all of you, but some of you. So mikem, from amongst you, people can bring it, but not all of you can bring it. Velo kulchem, prat, so who cannot bring it? Lemumar. So that's only people who are believers in the faith and subscribe to the faith can bring voluntary offerings. People who are mumarim cannot bring. Mikem, bachem chelakti velo b'umot. Bachem means amongst you. Amongst you means amongst Israel. So not amongst the Nachrim. That means that a goy who brings a korban, a voluntary korban, which we do accept, that we learn out from ish. So anybody can bring a korban, even a non-Jew can bring a voluntary korban. There, we don't ask them what their belief is, what their faith is. There, we accept no matter what, without any consideration. But the Jew, we only accept it if he's not a mumar. If he's a mumar, we won't accept his korban. Then the bride continues, bina be'ima, from the animal. Lavi bnei adam adomim be'ima. Comes to include people who act like animals. Not in the wild sense, but in the sense that they do not subscribe to the laws of the Torah. Nevertheless, we accept them. Mikan amru. From here they say, mikablim karbanot mipushei Yisrael. We accept korbanot from people who are violators. Today, shiachzeru b'tshuva, so they'll do tshuva. If we reject their korbanot, they're never going to return. If we at least keep them connected and we allow them to bring the korbanot, there's a chance that they'll be chozer b'tshuva. Rashi says over here, di dachinanu b'yadayim, if we push them away with their hands, tulo hadri, they're not going to return. If we sever the ties with them, there's no chance they're going to do tshuva. So at least if we maintain the ties with them, there's a chance they're going to do tshuva. Plays a central role in the view of the Rishonim in the Middle Ages as to what to do with people who are apostates, people who converted to the Christian religion to save their lives, and then afterwards want to come back, especially with a Kohen. Kohanim who leave for a different religion lose their status as a Kohen. When they return, they're no longer Kohanim. And Rashi and many others speak about the problem with this, which is technically they're not Kohanim, and they shouldn't be allowed to return as Kohanim. But Rishonim bring up this issue, which is it's Noel Delet Bifnei Balei Tshuva. It prevents people from doing Tshuva. If a person knows when he returns, he will not be a Kohen. It's going to be an embarrassment for him. Before he was a Kohen, he comes back and he's no longer a Kohen. It's going to be a tremendous embarrassment. He will not return. And therefore, many of the Rishonim have a dispensation for a Kohen, apostate, to return and retain his status as a Kohen. It's machloket in the Rishonim. But they quote, basically, this thesis over here, which is, k'dei she'achzeru b'tshuva, and d'ichinu lo b'yadayim d'lo hadri. If we push them out like that, they're not coming back. So we have this idea of maintaining a tie, or having dispensations for people, because we want them to be chozer b'tshuva. Chutz, the exception to that rule is, min ha'mumar, v'ha'menaseh chiyayin, v'ha'mechalel shabbatot b'far asiyah. Exception to that is a mumar, someone who is worshipping Avodah Zarah, pours wine libations to Avodah Zarah, mechalel shabbatot b'farisyan, someone who violates the Shabbat publicly. Where it says, aguf akasha, it's an internal stira in the Breita, basically what you raised, Fred. Amarta mikam v'lo kulchem, lo tziyata mumar. You said at first that we limit the people who can bring korbanot. Only people who are subscribers to the faith and are not mumarim can bring. Vadar tani, and afterwards you say, mekablin korbanot, mipushe Yisrael. You can accept korbanot from violators within Klal Yisrael, where it says Adokasha, that's not a problem. Reisha b'mumar l'chol haTorah kula. Reisha is talking about someone who's a mumar for the entire Torah. Here, if this person basically has abrogated the whole Torah, then we're not going to let him bring a korban. He's gone too far. He's overstepped the bounds. He's beyond reach at this point in time. The assumption is he's not coming back. Mitziata, the middle case in the Breita, is b'mumar l'davar echad, someone who violates a single aveira. In that case, we don't consider him to be beyond the pale. We don't consider him to be beyond tshuva. And there we allow him to bring the korban. And that's what we said, mina be'ema, we accept mi poshe Yisrael. Ema seifa, what about the last part of the braita that says, chutz mina mumar, v'amenaseh chiyayin, hai mumar hechidami. Over there you gave three examples. One was a mumar, the other one is a vodazara, and then Shabbat. What's the definition of the word mumar there? Im mumar l'chol haTorah, hainu resha. If he's a mumar l'chol haTorah kula, that we already dealt with in the Mishnah. If it's a mumar for one aveira, then we already dealt with that in the middle part of the braita. And we already said he can bring the korban, now you're saying he can't bring it. He meant the braita to read this way. Mumar here is being modified by the description of what that mumar here, which are the next two cases mentioned in the braita, which is someone who's ovid avodah zarah, someone who's mechalel shabbat v'esya. Alma, avodah zarah v'shabbat ki'adad eininhu. Avodah Zarah and Shabbat are held on the same plane, Shema Mina, and that's what Rav Huna was saying. Someone who's Mechal Shabbat V'Hesya attains the same status as someone who is worshipping Avodah Zarah. Shabbat is considered to be such a fundamental of the faith, such an integral part of our faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that if someone has violated Shabbat B'Farhesya, then he's the equivalent of someone who's Obed Avodah Zarah, and he becomes a Mumar L'Chola Turah Kula. Which is actually today, the halacha is this way. Someone who is a mumar l'chal shabbat v'esya is no longer naman. For instance, with the kashrut, the guards of the kashrut, a person who is mumar l'chal shabbat v'esya loses his nemanut with regards to kashrut. And you need a mashkiach to come in. V'nichnas v'yotze, need someone to watch over him because he's lost his nemanut. He's lost his status as a Jew, his naman in these cases. And just like a person who worships Avodah Zarah loses that status, l'chal shabbat v'esya also loses his status. Certain rights or certain privileges that one has granted as a Jew, those are relinquished because you become a mumar l'chol haTorah kula when you violate Shabbat and when you violate Avodah Zarah. Now we get to the Mishnah that we would have liked to have known numerous dapim ago, which is the Gemara is quoting, has quoted pieces of this Mishnah all along, but this is the Mishnah about Bittul Rishut. How does Bittul Rishut work? And here's the description in the Mishnah. Anshe chatzer sheshokach echad mehem v'lo yirev. One of the individuals in the chatzer forgot, v'lo yirev, And he didn't make an eruv. Beito asur menachnis ulotzi lo vilahem. His house then becomes restricted from carrying out into the chatzer, both for him and for them. Vishalahem, and their houses, mutarim lo vilahem, are mutar for him and them. The Gemara is going to ask the question right away, wait a minute, if he's not part of the Eruv, and there's no Eruv here, how are they carrying it all from the houses into the chatzer? It's obvious there was bitul reshut over here. He was mevatel his reshut to the majority. He gave up his rights, relinquished his rights to the others who are there, and therefore, his house remains restricted now. You can't carry from his house into the chatzer, or from the chatzer into his house. Whereas, for everybody else who has singular ownership there, that means from all the other houses into the chatzer, from the chatzer there, both he and they can carry back and forth. Not ulo reshutan, if they did it the other way around. They all relinquish their rights in favor of this one individual. Then hu mutar v'hein asurim. He can carry out of his house into the chatzer and back in. They can do nothing. The Gemara again will discuss why that is. Hayush naim. If there were two individuals there, everybody in the chatzer relinquished their rights to two individuals. Osrim zelzeh. They cause a problem for each other, because you still don't have singular ownership, because you have two individuals with ownership over here. Sheachad notain reshut, v'notel reshut. An individual can grant or relinquish his rights, v'notel reshut, and he can receive the rights from others. Shnaim, multiple people, notim reshut, can grant their rights to a single individual. But they cannot receive the rights from the others, because as long as there's two left, you don't have an Eruv anymore. From when can you grant Rishut? This bitul Rishut, at what time of the day does it work? It has to be before the onset of Shabbat. Even after Shabbat starts, you can be mevatel Rishut, which we've seen throughout the Gemara before, this idea of bitul Rishut during Shabbat. Someone who granted his rights, and then he reasserts his rights by carrying from his house into the chatzer. This is the Rabbi Meir we quoted in the last couple of dapim. He says once you've reasserted rights, intentionally or unintentionally, the whole bitul reshut falls apart, and you've reversed the granting of your rights. Oser, if you did it intentionally, then he is reasserting his rights and ruins the eruv. Bishugeg in Osir. If he does it unintentionally, then the Eruv remains in place. Mara says, Beita hudu asur, hachatzero sharia. Wait, his bite is asur, but the chatzer is fine? Hechidami, what happened here? Either batil, if he was mevatel his reshut, if he relinquished his control in the chatzer, this one individual forgot to join the Eruv, he now relinquishes his rights, then beita amai asur. Why is his bite, why is his house asur? If he relinquishes his rights, it means that he gives up all of his ownership. Because of all his ownership, then we have singular ownership here, and everybody should be able to carry from every house into the chatzer and vice versa. Idlo batil, if he didn't relinquish control here, chatzero amai sharia. Why is the chatzer mutar at all? Then you don't have an eruv over here. When I say, Zachamai eskinin kol shebitel reshut chatzero velo bitel reshut beito. He relinquished his ownership or his rights in the chatzer, but not his rights in the house. Because savrei rabbonon. And the Rabbanan believe, this takes us way back in the Masechta, all the way back to Daf Chavov in the Masechta, that a mevatel reshut chatzero, reshut beito lo bitel. A person does relinquish his rights in the chatzer without relinquishing rights in his house. So when he relinquishes rights within the ownership or the joint ownership he has in the chatzer, that he relinquished. But his private ownership in his house, that he didn't relinquish, unless he explicitly says so. The dire in shape of bayit below chatzer. Because according to the Chachamim, according to the Rabbonon, a person is willing to live in a house without a chatzer. So therefore, v'shalhen mutar lo v'lahen. Their houses are mutar to carry out from them into the chatzer, and from the chatzer into those houses, because all of them have an eruv. They have joint ownership of that area, singular ownership of the chatzer and the batim, so you can go back and forth. The problem is that by his house, he granted his rights in the chatzer. So the chatzer becomes a singular owned property, but his bayit has separate ownership, his own ownership. So therefore, he can't carry out of his house to the chatzer, and neither can they carry from his house into the chatzer. Now as far as the other houses, everybody can carry from their houses into the chatzer, but we also grant him the right to carry from their houses into the chatzer. Why? Why can he carry from their houses into the chatzer? He maintained his individual ownership in his house. The answer is, my time, Adavi O'Rayach the Gabayu. He's a guest in their properties. As far as his house, he's asserting individual ownership over there, which causes a problem from the house into the chatzer, or the chatzer into his house. But as far as the remainder of the chatzer, or the remainder of the houses, he's a guest. And if he's a guest, then like any other guest, they can carry in and out of those houses like you're a guest over there. When they reverse, where they grant the rights to him individually. There we said only he can carry from his house into the chatzer, from the chatzer into his house. Everybody else is out of the picture that Shabbat. Why don't you just say the opposite? Over here, where he has all the rights to the chatzer and all the rights to the bayit, why don't we just say that the five others that are in the chatzer are his guests? If they're his guests, then they should be able to carry from his house to the chatzer, the chatzer to his house. At least that. Where it says, Chad gabi chamisha ve'oreach. One person visiting five is a guest. Chamisha gabi chat lo ve'oreach. Five people visiting one is not a guest. So that's the problem. It's just not a reality. It doesn't look right. When he is there in the chatzer, and there are five other people, not davka five, but there are multiple people in the chatzer, you can say he's the guest of the other people in the chatzer. To say everyone in the chatzer is his guest, that's a little more far-fetched, and that we don't say. So because of that, Shema Mina, Midvatlin, Vichozrim Mavatlin, our Mishnah makes it sound like you can be Mavatl Rishut multiple times. The Gemara is reading the Mishnah now as being sequential. First he relinquishes his rights to them, and then they subsequently relinquish all of their rights to him. So the Gemara is not reading the cases in the Mishnah, two separate cases, but as sequential cases, consecutive cases, where he relinquished rights, and then they relinquished rights. So the Gemara says, no, you read the Mishnah wrong. Hachi Gemara. Na'nu lo Rishutam Meikara. If up front they gave him Rishutam, humutar vein asurim. Don't say it as a consecutive or sequential case of the Mishnah. They're separate cases. One case where he grants them his rights, and the other case where they grant him their rights. Ayushnaim osrim zelzeh, pshita. What do you mean? Of course, if they grant all the rights to two individuals, they're oser zelzeh. Subsequent to that, one of the individuals grants his rights to the other one. So everybody in the chatzer grants their rights to Reuven and Shimon. Then after that, Reuven grants all of his rights to Shimon. So now there's only one owner here. Does that work? We think that works. Mashalan, it doesn't work. The reason it doesn't work is because when everybody in the chatzer granted the rights to both Reuven and Shimon together, it didn't work. And when it didn't work, then Reuven and Shimon don't acquire the rights of the other individuals there. The only way, we said before, you don't need a formalistic kinyan in order to accept someone's bitul reshut. That's only when the bitul reshut is effective. If it works, then you are acquiring it, and it stays that way for the whole Shabbat. But over here, where you granted all the rights to Reuven and Shimon together, it doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, it means they never took possession of those rights. They never took possession of the rights. Then when Reuven grants to Shimon all of his rights, he didn't do anything because he doesn't have rights to grant. He never had those rights to start with. And that's what the Gemara says is the Chiddush in that part of the Mishnah. She'achad notein reshut, v'hatu lomali. Why do I need that explanation? That's a derivative of what you said in the first part of the Mishnah. That one person can grant reshut and receive reshut. Multiple people can grant reshut, but they cannot accept it. Hatu lomali. Why do I need repetition of the cloud? Inotein tanina. If you're talking about granting rights, we already have it in our Mishnah. Inotel. Talking about receiving rights, Tanina. Seifa itztrichale. We need the latter case. Shnaim notnim reshut. Two people can grant rights. Hanami pshita. That's also pshita, that you can, multiple people can grant rights to a single individual. Where it says, no, ma'u detema ligzor dilma ati libitule lehu. We're afraid when two people grant reshut to an individual, that they'll say the opposite is true as well, that one can grant to two. And that doesn't work. Kamashmon, then we don't worry about that. We don't extrapolate, we don't worry about that. And therefore, two people can grant rights to a single individual, even though a single individual can't grant rights to multiple people. Okay, we'll stop over here.